Hello, and welcome to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. This is Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is episode 15 of season 1, titled The Operation.
This is an episode that I had no recollection of.
Really?
Like, I did not remember this episode at all.
Oh, I bet that was fun for you, actually, to rewatch it.
I loved it, actually. I'm giving away my thoughts, but I really liked this episode, but I literally had absolutely no memory of it.
I always remember this episode, especially the ending is very memorable, but I bet that was fun to watch it that way then.
Yeah, it was. And finally, a school. I mean, we'll get into that, but I'm like, this has been a question that I've had. At least it's good to know that it was intentional, you know, and not just like, I think at some point earlier in the podcast, we were like, what do they do about school? No one says anything about school.
Yeah.
We had a number of write-ins about our last episode, which was Heroes, which, by the way, Kelly, I noticed your little note when you like uploaded your file that was like dumb episode. When I went in to edit, I was like, I didn't put that there.
Yep. Isabel Rate on Facebook said, I always thought it was normal for a romantic young girl to have a crush on Sully. Who wouldn't? But on the other hand, she expresses it so openly, it bothered me. And this conversation with Michaela questioning her to know if the field is clear even more. That's not really a lesson, is it?
I think it's relating to, like, it's normal for girls to have crushes. But, yeah, how you go about it. Because I think you even, like, kind of said
it's a little far. Yeah, a little much.
Yeah. That kind of understanding reminds me of a write-in that we had on Instagram from Jenny from the Hollow. And she started by saying, I can't believe I disagree with Kelly, but I actually like this episode, which is great because it tells us that usually you and Jenny are on the same wavelength. But she did elaborate on this, which I really appreciated. She said that at the time that this episode aired, she was actually the same age as Colleen and had a huge crush on Sully too. She said, so I guess I always identified with her and her crush. However, I did feel like it was very sudden. She never had feelings for Sully until she read that story, and it was a little weird. All the girls thought she'd marry him when he was obviously way too old for her. Still, I thought the episode was cute, though, so I enjoyed it. I think it's really interesting how age can really play into the characters that you connect with and appreciate, and I really liked getting that kind of renewed perspective, but I also appreciated that she agreed that I think we made a great argument that this was a very sudden turnaround for Colleen, right. And I really think it was built off of this obsession with the story and the romance of the story, not actually based on reality.
But I do kind of like that, because I think I have more understanding to be like, yeah, if you were to watch this and be in that age group and be in the same situation, it makes a lot more sense versus now when we're adults and we're like, that's so crazy.
Actually, and we got an email from Julie, who her lesson was, be careful what you wish for or you might lose your hands. Yeah, I would never have expressed any of my crushes in the way that Colleen did.
To the lengths you must go.
To get a boy's attention.
Brittany Anderson said she had a few lessons. Love it. I think a lesson Colleen learns is to not confuse fantasy with reality, which is literally what we were just saying. She tried to apply a story to real life, and lots of mistakes and confusion came from that. I personally learned, as a person who hates jackets, that the key to staying warm and avoiding frostbite is layers and not a light shawl. Yes. Snaps. Your primary care provider is proud of you.
I just have to say, Brittany, I really want to know what happened to you in your childhood that made you hate jackets. This feels like such a very specific thing to be like,
I think people think they're constricting. Some people think they're constricting. I love jackets, but...
Well, I'm cold all the time, so my parents always say that I'm overdressed.
This is true. Her last thing she said is, I also learned not to rub vigorously on extremities in cases of frostbite. I always thought you should. Interesting. That makes me happy. That means people are learning things. I like when people learn things. I'm learning things too.
Yeah. Rainey, the ultimate ginge, kind of wrote in and gave a little shout out to what this episode reminded her of. And she said, let's just say Colleen is reminding me of the hardcore fan fiction writers of the early 2000s, fanfiction.net, anyone, who self-insert themselves into cringeworthy stories, clearly only from the imagination of preteens with no sense of boundaries. Which I feel like you would very much agree with.
Yep, that last sentence is pretty spot on.
I wrote back to Rainey and was just like, oh, don't bring up fanfiction.net because I wrote some stories for fanfiction.net when I was a teen.
I don't think I knew that.
For the Merlin TV show.
That makes sense. I don't really know that much. I didn't know there was like a website for that, to be honest.
Well, there's like a lot of them now. This is way off topic, but like, if you want to talk about like trashy romance, the entire 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan fiction that she then got published.
Oh, okay. I don't want to know these things. I don't even know what that is, but I don't want to know. Okay.
I never wrote that kind of fan fiction.
Yeah, let's just clarify.
Mine was like, I don't want characters who died to be dead.
Right. Revive them.
Fix it, lit. Totally Nicole wrote in on Instagram, but we've also been talking on Twitter, and she's like a huge Dr. Quinn fan, and I love reading the things that she posts online. But she wrote that, I think Michaela learned that she might need to be a little more intentional in her conversations with Colleen and awareness of Colleen's feelings and actions. This is the second time that she completely missed something important to the teenage girl experience, the first being in The Visitor. Mm. As you guys have mentioned, Mike is doing her best at parenting, and teenage girls are hard. But I think reading the letter Colleen wrote to Sully made her realize she's missing some things. I also think that Sully once again learned how important he is to the children, especially over the course of the last few episodes, with Matthew seeking guidance from him and being Colleen and Brian's hero. I think all of that's really good perspective about Dr. Mike and learning to be more intentional. I like that Nicole pointed out that there is consistency in Dr. Mike trying to figure out what Colleen needs from her might be different than what like Matthew and Brian need from her.
Yeah. It is a good point to bring up that Dr. Mike's still working on her mom skills as well. And I'm also like, I feel like it gives us just like a slight piece of what she was probably like as a teenage girl, and that wasn't it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, and we kind of, I think we saw that, like, her relationship with her mother kind of just shows, yeah, that the experience that she had was very different.
Yeah.
Totally Nicole also added some thoughts on Sully and Colleen's relationship going forward. Since we are spoiler free on this podcast, I'm not going to read it, but if you're interested in checking out what she wrote, you can find it on our Instagram underneath the Heroes Request for Lessons.
Thanks for sharing, guys. I definitely thought I was going to get like pummeled with
no
disagreements towards my opinion on this episode.
You know what I liked about this? That episode was actually our second longest next to the pilot. And I think that's what's fun. Like the episodes that we really love, I think we have less to say. Whereas the ones that maybe we don't like or find things that we don't like about it, it definitely makes for a more interesting conversation to like break those down.
Right.
So I appreciate episodes like Heroes that allow us to like really delve deep into all sorts of different things. So it was fun for me to talk about Heroes.
Me too.
Was it really?
I'm just glad it's over because I like the rest of the season.
Yes, well, so today we're gonna talk about The Operation.
Okay, let's jump in, guys. Here we go, episode 15.
Season 1, episode 15, titled The Operation, aired on the 8th of May, 1993. It was directed by James Keach. This is his second time back. The last time we saw him as director was Law of the Land. And the writer is Beth Sullivan. This is the first solo credit of Beth Sullivan since the pilot. She gets credit every week as being creator.
Oh, wow.
And I have to wonder if sometimes she wasn't also giving input, but this is the first time that she alone, since the pilot, has been the writer. Which, knowing how much I really did enjoy this, I'm like, do I love Beth Sullivan? The first scene opens on Sully, Brian, and Wolf tracking. They're out in the woods. Brian is learning. It's really cute. And they have a conversation. We've heard about the school being built. They were raising money for the schoolhouse in Father's Day, was I think the first time we heard about it.
Which was a long time ago, it feels like, but...
Yes. And we don't really get the total reason why. Like, they never confirm why, but Sully kind of gets weird about he's probably not going to help build the schoolhouse. And Brian declares he knows why, and it's because the Cheyenne don't have any need for book learning. And Sully corrects him. And then, do you know the part of the scene where Brian looks up and he goes, look, Sully, a hawk. And then they show us a bald eagle. I just thought about, I think it was a vine. Do you remember Vine?
Yeah.
There was the vine of the little girl, and there was like a field full of ducks. And it's like this little girl who turns around and goes, look at all those chickens.
Yeah, I do remember that. As soon as you started telling it, I'm like, I feel like I know what she's about to say.
That's all I could think of when he's like, look at the hawk. And then, of course, thankfully, Sully corrects him. So that he says an eagle, but we know it's a bald eagle, which is, you know, the national bird of America, which this is a totally unrelated history fact, but everyone should know this. Benjamin Franklin, one of the founding fathers who I really find so fascinating. He was such an interesting man. Benjamin Franklin wanted the United States national bird to be the turkey.
Turkey.
And just so you know, turkeys, if they look up at the sky in the rain, they drown. So I admire Benjamin Franklin for a lot of things, including helping influence the French join the American Revolution, which helped the Americans win the Revolutionary War and made them an independent country. But I am glad in this one instance that Ben Franklin didn't get what he wanted.
Too funny.
Sully's talking about how the Cheyenne believe that eagles are sacred because they carry wisdom, and he tells a story of this boy who soared like an eagle. To be honest, we don't really pay too much attention to the story, mostly because Brian is climbing up a big tree, which shouldn't be weird or frightening, but the music and the way that we notice that Sully's not really paying attention to what Brian's doing, we know it's building to something bad. And Brian wants to fly, so he jumps out of the tree. And it starts playing, I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch.
Do you ever have like those songs that just like are constantly in your mind and they just like live there? That is one of those songs that's just constantly in my mind at all times. I don't know why, but it has been since like middle school.
I love Space Jam.
Kid President shout out. Yes, so we're leading up to this moment, but Brian is convinced that he can fly because he jumped off that haystack that one time and it felt like flying and it was amazing. As he goes to jump, Sully tries to stop him, but it's too late.
He's too far away.
And as he falls, yeah, he's too far away, but you can see Sully's trying to get there in time to kind of catch him, but he doesn't. Brian lands on the ground, is like limp, unconscious. And so Sully picks him up and they run into town. Right, the first thing I think anybody would probably think is some sort of head injury. He's landed from, I don't know how tall that was, how high, but
I kind of wish they hadn't shown him hit the ground.
Was it not convincing for you?
Yeah, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
Because he kind of has his arm out. Like, I almost wish they would have shot it that we saw Sully running toward him and we saw, like, his body fall in front of the camera and then we just heard the sound. Because I think it would work better later when at first Sully's like, I don't know where he hit his head, you know? Because then it would be more convincing to us because we would also feel like all we were watching was him fall and trying to get there. But because we kind of see him fall, and I'm not saying that people can fall with far less force and still get a bad injury.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it later when you learn the severity, I'm like, yeah, it probably wouldn't have looked like that, but I mean, head injuries occur from falls like that. Motor vehicle accidents, sports injuries are like the most common causes, so that's all we really know at this point because we're interrupted by the title sequence with no narration for those of you who actually care. And Next thing we know, Dr. Mike is at the clinic and she's checking Brian out.
He's awake.
Yeah, I should say that. And, you know, he says nothing hurts. And I really hope that Dr. Mike did a good neuro exam, mental status exam, looked at his cerebellar responses, motor, sensory test, reflexes. We see her do that. Because that's what I would be doing if I had somebody that came in with this scenario.
Did you notice
what
Beth Sullivan brought back her own joke from the pilot?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I did notice that because I remember we talked about it before and then you said something like, oh, that's what it's called, a tomahawk? And I'm like, no. Yeah.
Well, I just also think it's interesting to know, like, she purposely makes this recall back to the pilot, which is interesting because when that happened in the pilot was when Charlotte and the kids went to help clean out the homestead and Brian was picking through her bag and he's like, you have a tomahawk like Sully. And then here we have Sully's in the room and he's like, look, Ma has a tomahawk too.
Right.
But what is that thing actually called?
It's just a reflex hammer.
I forgot already.
And actually, a lot of them still look like that today. I have one that looks a little different, but a lot of them look exactly the same. Sully says that it was an hour before he regained consciousness, which to me, that's a significant amount of time, an hour. And they also must have been pretty far out for him to
to wake up.
Yeah, I guess he was conscious by the time they got there. Dr. Mike is really prompting Sully of where did you see him fall? And at first Sully's not sure. You know, he said, I don't know. And then he's like, of course I remember. He landed on his left side. And he repeats it. He landed on his left side. And I think we're kind of seeing in this scene that Sully is feeling a lot of responsibility, even though Brian may feel fine at this point because Brian's insisting he's fine. And, you know, I don't know. There's this kind of moment where Dr. Mike is like, you shouldn't have even been in the tree. And she looks at Sully. I don't know if it's in an accusatory way, but it's the way she says it and the way that she directs her glance at him when she says it that's kind of like, okay, he probably feels bad enough, but
hello, it's 1870 almost. Kids climb freaking trees. They live in the country.
I know. I wish kids climbed more trees today. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think Sully is very much focusing on Brian. And then he's like, no more stories. You're going to go to school soon. But it's kind of like as soon as Dr. Mike says, well, you seem fine, Sully leaves. And Dr. Mike even tells the kids Sully is mad at himself.
Yeah, and I think Joe Lando does a good job of showing us how seeing Brian fall, scared Sully more than it scared, you know, Brian. Like, he's a kid, right? He's like, I'm fine, it's good. Well, why are y'all freaking out? You know, maybe he likes the attention, but...
Well, and like you said, I think he does a good job displaying care, but also realizing, he's working through something. So, we transition to after church, and our main townspeople are outside, and there's this big conversation about building the schoolhouse. And Brian is so cute because he's like, books are real important. You know, he's really had, I guess, we've only seen these conversations with Sully about how important that is, but...
Well, and I think that's what got Brian on board. I think they'll say that later. He wasn't too into the school thing, because he wants to be like Sully, and then Sully says, I don't know enough about books. I should know more, and you should learn more for me. So now he's like, okay, I'm into this.
We then have a conversation about who is going to be the foreman. And of course, Lauren and Jake volunteer.
Did you find it interesting to learn that Jake is from Pittsburgh?
Yes, he's also from the Northeast. And that's also a big city. Yeah. Which, you know how there's people that are will tell you they're from New York, but then you find out they've lived somewhere else for 40 something years, but they still identify as being somewhere else. So
this whole thing, they make big jokes out of it though, because it's Lauren's like, I built the shack behind the mercantile that leaks. And Jake's like, I helped my dad in Pittsburgh, which we're like, how long has it been since, you've been in Pittsburgh? And this is the only conversation we're going to have about it, which, again, this is one of those scenes, and we'll have another one a little bit later, that you could do a whole episode on this.
For sure.
But still to this day, Sunday morning is the most segregated time in America. Mm. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but Matthew speaks up in favor of Robert E. and saying, you know, Robert E. knows more about building than anyone in this town, which I'm flashing back to the epidemic where I was like, why is the blacksmith building the coffins? And I'm like, okay, so now we have it. It's canon that Robert E. knows construction. So I take back what I said before. But anyway, the Reverend. This is like, I go back and forth about the Reverend all the time, but...
I know.
He doesn't always... tries to do it respectfully, but I almost hate him more for it.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather, like, if you're gonna kind of be racist a little bit, then just do it. Don't be like, well, we shouldn't volunteer people who aren't here. And then Dr. Mike calls him out and goes, yeah, well, why aren't they here? I know, you know, Grace and Robert E. are both Christians. And then we learn that there is actually a black church, though... the Reverend's like, it's a meeting house. And Dr. Mike's like, it's a shack. And then in the end, there's no resolution. The Reverend just goes, yes, that hill looks like a great place to build totally, the schoolhouse. Yeah, he
totally, you know, just shuts down the conversation and moves on. Yeah.
I mean, and I did skip over, they get a little offended, which this is so today too, right? When people get called out for... discriminating, they're like, I'm not a racist, except the 1860 version of it is, we were all unionists, which I just want to point out, this is kind of a contradiction, which actually, okay, couple things. We learn Jake is from Pennsylvania, which actually is significant because we would know then that he grew up in the North, which would have been a state that opposed slavery. So that is significant that we know that is his geographical background. You know, we can't always let that speak for people's moral...
correct.
...political opinions. But, okay, I like that they've drawn that parallel. But also, this scene a little bit contradicts what Charlotte said in the pilot when we learned that this whole story is happening post the Civil War. Charlotte says that no one out west... really cared much of anything about the Civil War. Like, that was a direct line in the pilot. And the way that Jake says that, and Lauren throws out like a, yeah, in agreement. And also based on, we have this whole thing with like, Jake didn't want Robert E. in his... well, and this is the problem. We expect people to be 100% one thing or another. Mm. Like, how can someone say... that they are a unionist, therefore support the abolition of slavery, and yet still be a person who's like, I will not heal, serve anyone who is non-white. Because right. I don't want to just say this is just an issue for the black characters. It's also an issue for native characters when it comes to Jake.
Immigrants, yeah.
And the immigrants, yeah. It's so... hard because we want people to be one thing. How, you know, you can't say I'm not racist, but I still have these prejudices toward people who are a different ethnicity, race, whatever, than me. And I think there are people who say, like, you cannot be that. And that's where I just think about the world today. Like, a lot of people have issues with this because they're like, you can't have this opinion on one thing, but then still act this way or, you know, not tolerate this or whatever. But the fact is that people are more complicated than just being like, oh, if I'm not racist, then that's what this means. Or if I am racist, then that's what this means. And I think we see that in a lot of these characters where even in this episode, we're going to see characters who are really, most of the time, jerks. Do nice things, you know, and it's so hard, I think, in our minds sometimes to like get over it. But I recognize it in myself, right?
Like, yeah.
And it's not something necessarily to be proud of, and it's not necessarily something to hate yourself for either, because we're not perfect and we're multifaceted. And yes, I may not be a racist, but that doesn't mean that I haven't grown up in a society that has put racial biases in me.
Right, absolutely.
That I have to overcome and learn about myself.
And recognize.
Which is what's interesting is because then Dr. Mike's next comment is, well, if we're all unionists, then we're all abolitionists. Which, again, I would say that just because you're an abolitionist and you believe, you know, in the end of slavery doesn't necessarily mean that these people are openly welcome to ending segregation. And we know historically it's going to be many years and in some ways a struggle that our society is still facing and still having to battle.
Yeah. And I think I just wanted to add, like, I think that still happens today, which you kind of mentioned, right? That people want to say, I am not this one thing, but, you know, everybody has, like you said, unconscious bias, and being able to recognize those and bring them to the light for your own sake, not just for the sake of others, is important. And so, yeah, it was a struggle to watch this scene, especially, I think, for the Reverend, just because
he says nothing.
Yeah. Which sometimes when you don't say anything, that says more than when you do say something. And I think that was my thoughts on him during this scene, just because there's been too many times of conflict when it's like this right versus wrong, and you're supposed to be like this character of morality, and I think we'd like you to be like, take a stance. And I've seen it too many, like multiple times with him where he doesn't, and that's...
He doesn't, yeah, because he wants to keep everyone happy. Mm. And unfortunately, this, you know, as a Christian, I feel like we can be like, this is an inner Christian struggle. Yeah. And then I think there's also the opposite. There are certain things that Christians feel really strongly about that I'm like, does this really matter?
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, there's other stuff going on that we say nothing about.
Right, right.
And I include myself in that.
Me as well.
Shout out to my high school gym teacher, Mr. Baltzer. Mr. Baltzer was our PE teacher, but PE and health. But he gave the best motivational, inspirational speeches ever. And I remember one of the things that he told us that has stuck with me was, not saying something says something.
Yep.
And usually silence is approval.
Mm.
He said that, and I still remind myself of that. And I definitely think both those things apply to the Reverend. One more cool thing just related to this scene, since I won't have too much history to talk about after this. As I was doing some reading about, obviously, the history of abolition and, you know, unionists through history, what does that mean to be a unionist pre-Civil War, during the Civil War, and post-Civil War. But one thing that I thought was really cool, and it's just a little tidbit, and I just want to talk about it because I just think it's really awesome. And I'd like to imagine it in the canon. So in 1833, which is actually the year that Dr. Mike was born.
Hmm.
In 1833, the Boston Female Anti-Slavery Society was founded.
Whoa.
And it was these women who... they were abolitionists, and they wrote articles and wanted to get education out there about the abolitionist movement. But in order to do that, they often wanted to publish articles in the abolitionist newspaper called The Liberator. But in order to do that, you had to have money. And so these women came up with a way to raise money, and they started a Christmas fair. It was an anti-slavery Christmas fair where throughout the year these women would hand make all these goods, you know, knitting, sewing, I don't know, other holiday festive ornaments and stuff, and they would sell them, and all the money would go toward this anti-slavery education. And it later became the Christmas Bazaar. And in 1840, it started to become a yearly event. In 1840, they hosted this bazaar, and it was one of the first times a Christmas tree was used in America, because the Christmas tree came over with German immigrants.
Wow.
And so it was one of New England's first Christmas trees was at this Christmas bazaar. And it's really cool. There's a really cool history.com video all about this, where the people started protesting these Christmas bazaars. And so every year they would host it at a different person's house. And by the end of its run, it had actually begun to be a week-long fair. And then it got so big and it started getting dangerous that they actually stopped hosting it annually and started doing like a soiree or a ball kind of thing instead, where they would host benefactors and donors and that kind of thing, and it became something else. But I love it because it really, this anti-slavery fair was a big part of Boston and really the bigger New England's first Christmas celebrations, but it was all in the benefit of the abolitionist movement in the United States. And what I also like to imagine is, since it was started, you know, in 1833, they held the bazaar. I like to imagine that Dr. Mike might have attended as a child, a young girl into her teen years. And that would explain so much why she feels, right, you know, really strongly about the things she does growing up. So I like it that. Was just a little, yeah, it was just a little tidbit that I stumbled upon in my reading. And I was like, this is too cool not to talk about.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like you sharing that.
So the plans start and Jake and Lauren can't get along.
Go figure.
And then we learn that Jake can't read, which is...
which is fine. It's fine. I'm like, okay, no problem. That's, you know, it's the 1800s. The kids we have now aren't even going to school. We don't know what the situation is. I can't believe how much Lauren starts laughing and is like, wait till people find out. And I'm like, what a meanie. Like, that's supposed to be your closest friend, basically.
I don't know if you remember, but we had a discussion about literacy rates in Father's Day when we learned that Ethan Cooper couldn't read, where between 1850 and 1860, it suggested that 75 to 90% of adult whites were literate. So it's interesting not only to find out that Jake is one that who isn't, but also just to think about, because we felt this way with Ethan Cooper too, like these people who couldn't read and write, but it actually, you know, formed these businesses and really put on this air of... how long has Lauren not known? That's my thing. You get the impression they've been friends for a really long time. And this idea that he's been living with it, not telling anyone, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know how this plot point serves the greater plot of the episode.
Other than to just have Lauren be the one in charge.
Right. Then having a reason for Jake to quit, which... I think they probably could have come up with something else. I wish they had maybe like tied it in to this idea of they're building a schoolhouse so that more children don't grow up to not be literate. You know what I mean? Like, I wish they had tied it in a little bit better with the greater story. But I mean, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Because, well, I guess before we kind of see Jake sulking about that, we have the family riding into town and Brian casually mentions that his hat is feeling too small, which I think immediately everybody is like, okay, that seems like a warning sign. But he decides he's going to go help Lauren build the school. And Matthew's
so cute.
He's so freaking cute. But Matthew kind of repeats what we said earlier in that, saying that, you know, Sully really lit a fire under him about this school because he wants to be involved with every aspect of the school getting built. Then we're obviously in the saloon and Hank and Myra are kind of trying to make Jake feel better about the fact that he can't read because they can't read either.
Though I like that it's just a little bit of a hint where we see Myra's about to say like that she wishes she could or she wants to, and Hank kind of shuts it down.
Yeah.
But I get a little worried because I see Jake.
Jake in the saloon. I know. Yeah. Me too. But what are you going to do?
Dr. Mike is at Bray's Mercantile. She's buying all of the bandages from linen, Olive, yeah, because apparently no one returns them. And some of these scenes I feel like were fillers to get to the big story, because it's like, you know, Olive gives her a little bit of a lecture of like, you need to be a tougher businesswoman, you know, and
charge a fee,
make people pay you. And she's like, you know,
it's worked out
so far. Yeah, when people give me what they have, it's worked out,
right? Lauren is feeling a lot of pressure from the other men to get the blueprints, the building plans finished. And Brian runs over and scares him, of course. But we kind of see Brian beside Lauren and he starts to rub his eyes, rubbing his temples. We see his vision. They actually kind of flip that around. I don't know what that's called. Kind of
point of view. We get his
point of view of just like his vision kind of going in and out of focus. And Lauren knocks down an eraser and asks Brian to get it. And this is where we see Brian realize that he can't see. And it's, it just kind of broke my heart when he starts calling for Lauren, even though, like, we know that Lauren's right beside him. But he's calling for Lauren. Mr. Bray. He doesn't know where he is. And obviously Lauren's very concerned. And so he picks him up and runs him into town. And I'm pretty sure this is, like, the sweetest scene ever because, I don't know, it's just, like...
It is really sweet.
Orson Bean does a very good job of, like, having like very concerned look on his face and just like running as fast as he can, even as like an old man.
Well, just like going from the two extremes.
Right. Like if like you're this annoying kid that just scared me and now I'm like, this is serious. Let me find your mom.
Yeah. The way that he just kind of acts like he doesn't care about Brian mm-hmm. and just like brushes him off and like, oh, he's a little nuisance. But the minute Brian needs him, yeah. he's like, I'm here.
You ever see like a lot of old men do that?
It's definitely a story archetype, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. So Lauren runs into town calling for Dr. Mike and they take him into the clinic and we see her using a candle and this like type mirror type tool to look into his eye.
To check for dilation of his pupils, question mark?
What we call this today is we call it a fundoscopic exam, and I'm sure all of you have had one. They take a tool. It's called an ophthalmoscope. They look in your eyes. And the tools we have now, we're able to see actually the back of your eyeball and all the things that are involved in that, including the optic nerve, which is important in this case. But, you know, I think she's looking for pupillary response. Absolutely. She's going to look to see if they're equal, reactive, round to light, dilated, or whatever. And so just to kind of give people a quick anatomy lesson, the optic nerve, which is the nerve connected to your eyes, obviously, that helps you see, is actually kind of towards the center of your brain. And if you were to have some sort of hemorrhage or some sort of bleeding in the layer of the meninges, which the meninges are just membranes that kind of envelope the brain and the spinal cord. But if you were to have that, they could put pressure on the other structures in your brain, including the optic nerve, which would cause you to have vision changes. So that's kind of just to give a background of what we're thinking is going on here. And Dr. Mike will say that, but it's kind of sad because Brian's like, is it nighttime? Like, turn on the light. Like, he still hasn't had this like click in his brain of like, no, I just like went blind. It's just he doesn't really understand what's going on. And so,
well, you have to wonder if he's even ever been like exposed to blindness as an issue.
As a condition, for sure, of something that could happen, especially to a child. So his head is hurting all over, which is obviously a concern for a couple types of hemorrhages. But, you know, they try to give him rest. And Colleen brings up, like, why aren't we giving him laudanum? Which we've talked about laudanum a lot on this show. And it's an opium tincture during this time that was used for treating pain, a cough suppressant, diarrhea is how we've seen it been used. But at this time, you know, Dr. Mike says, like, we don't use it in neuro cases. And the reality is they know a lot about anatomy at this point. They do know a lot about the brain, but I'm glad that she kind of says that because laudanum is actually what we call a CNS depressant, which means central nervous system depressant. And so what it's going to do is it's going to lower all those neurotransmitters in your brain, reduce your arousal and stimulation, basically slow down your brain activity, which in this case we don't want to do because he's already having neuro symptoms. So I think we also see Colleen start to become concerned. It's her brother and this is a weird thing that's happening to him. And I think, you know, we're kind of tying it back to the fact that he fell out of a tree. Like, I don't know, when was that? Yesterday, we're guessing? We don't really know.
At least a day because, you know, when they come into the town in the morning. I do appreciate that in the next scene when Dr. Mike comes outside to kind of update this whole crowd that has formed, that she says that she doesn't know much about the brain because I know, like, this show, she's all they have. But I definitely, you think about how many specialists we have today.
Yes.
You know, and people who literally specialize in like one part of the body and some people who specialize in one type of illness or injury even, mm-hmm. you know, that they only, and obviously the show would be boring if she only ever dealt with like, you know, one little range mm-hmm. of things. And I know in the end she is going to be the one who has to do this procedure. But I like that there's this acknowledgement that, yeah, this is a very complicated part of the body that she might not know as much about and that she's seeking help. Like, I don't know. I just really appreciated that acknowledgement.
And that's something I think they emphasize even like being in physician assistant school is like, it's okay to tell your patients you don't know something because that's what healthcare teams are about. And yeah, I mean, I think about this a lot because I want to practice medicine overseas, like in the third world. And, you know, when we're in class and it's like, oh, this person has this complication, whatever, you can just send them to the rheumatologist or the urologist, you know, and that's not always an option when you're the only healthcare provider in an area like Dr. Mike is. So, yeah, I think the reality is, especially during this time period, there's still a lot they don't know about the body. There's still a lot now we don't know about the body. But she tells everyone she thinks it's a subcranial hemorrhage, which she explains as a bruise inside your head, and as the blood collects, it applies pressure on your vision, which I previously explained. I will say that we don't use the term subcranial hemorrhage now, because hemorrhage is just a bleed, right? Subcranial just means beneath the cranium, which is just that bony covering of your brain. So now we know that there are certain locations that bleeding can occur. I was previously talking about the meninges, and we have the dura, arachnoid, pia mater, and so you can have a subdural hematoma, you can have subarachnoid, you can have intracranial. So for me watching this episode...
So her statement is like really general, like a brain bleed?
Yeah, exactly. It's a brain bleed, but you know, depending on what type you have, it's going to depend on... is going to affect your prognosis and how good your outcomes are going to be. But I don't blame her at all because I don't think they really had that kind of knowledge at this point in time. I know they didn't.
For sure.
But it was hard for me, and I was even asking some of my classmates like what they kind of thought was going on, because is it this kind? Is it this kind? What I've come to think is I think it's probably a subdural hematoma, which basically you're going to have that increased pressure inside the skull, which would cause damage to the brain tissue as well, not just your vision. And it can be extremely life-threatening. And a lot of times people do go into a coma either immediately or weeks after. The difference is today, I would do a CT scan to be able to look at what's going on, where is the bleed collecting, and I could figure that out. But we don't have that option here. So, you know, he's going to have all these symptoms that have occurred. So she kind of seems like, I don't want to say depressed, but kind of sad outside. And then she sees Horace and gets this great idea that she's going to ask Horace to send a telegram to Boston. I always think it's funny how everybody just follows everyone around. You know what I mean? She just like walks over there and the whole crowd follows.
Yeah.
But she...
People must be bored.
I mean, we've established this, yes. Same people that watched her get her tooth ripped out are like, you're gonna send a telegram?
Or were narrated through Lauren's hernia surgery.
Yeah, his gut scooping out. Yeah, so she asked for a telegram to be sent to Michael McKay, who is someone who worked with her dad, so that she can figure out who is the nearest neuro specialist. I don't know if you noticed, but after she does it, she kind of walks away and she's like in a trance, just like walking down the street.
Yeah.
She returns to the clinic.
I think there's a big hint of helplessness in this episode. Not just her, like later, you know, Matthew, Colleen,
right.
Sully, like a helplessness. There's a lot we can't control in this situation.
Yeah.
And it's a little boy's life.
And it's her son's life.
Right. I do want to... Like I said, there's not a lot of history in this episode. So this is the first time we got like a close look at Horace's...
Telegraph?
Yes. I realized that I don't actually know how telegrams worked.
Other than Morse code.
Morse code.
And some wires. Yeah.
Right. So the telegraph was invented in 1830 by Samuel Morse and Alfred Vail in New Jersey. The first... message that they sent, which was basically a test message via Morse code, was a patient waiter is no loser.
Okay.
So someone who waits patiently will never lose. You know,
I'm a medical person. When I hear, I think like a patient, like a client for
no,
medicine.
No, like patience is a virtue, patient.
Oh gosh.
And then the first official one that Morse sent was, "What hath God wrought?" which is from the Bible. Interestingly, the first types of telegraphs had these towers that could be set in like over 200 positions, like these wires and towers that had arms. But really, what makes a telegram possible? Obviously, we understand Morse code, it's the dots and the lines, but it uses... In those wires, it actually uses electromagnets. Now, here's the fun little tip. Morse got his initial idea for the invention of the telegraph on a ship that was called the Sully.
Why are all the universes colliding in this episode?
Which I just thought, no way. Now, we've seen Horace send telegrams, but I never knew, like, how do they just listen for the dots and dashes? But that's later.
the way that it actually worked was when the dots and dashes from Morse code were transmitted to a receiver that was made up of a pencil and a rolling strip of paper. And it would actually, the electromagnetics would pulse, and that's what would give them the dots and dashes.
So that's why they don't have to, like, be on call all the time.
Right. But I think the idea is that's later, you know, they're going to say, like, Horace isn't leaving the machine because right. he's waiting for it to come through so that he has it right away. So anyway, I just was, like, realizing that I didn't really know how it all worked, but
yeah,
it's
no,
actually super cool. And now you know the telegraph was invented by Morse, his first initial plans and ideas, on a boat named the Sully.
So basically, Sully is the one that we should thank for. I'm just kidding. Obviously, Dr. Mike returns to the clinic, and now Brian is sleeping, and she tells Colleen to get a horse from Arvidy so he can run over to Olive's, ride over to Olive's and tell Matthew what's going on. And they both are pretty tearful because I think it's a scary moment for them, obviously.
You feel kind of bad they do these back-to-back episodes of, like, Colleen last episode possibly losing her fingers.
I guess that's the reality of living in the West at this time is, yeah.
In the wild,
snake bites, frostbite, falls.
In the clinic, we get a short little scene in Brian's room where Dr. Mike finally, you know, earlier she kind of lied to him and was like, yes, it's night, even though it wasn't. But now that she realizes this is more serious, she kind of tells him the truth that she sent for another doctor, that you don't need a lamp right now, that Matthew's going to go find Sully because Brian's asking where he is. I like the part where they compare Dr. Mike asking another doctor for help, you know, because he's an expert on what's going on with Brian. I like the comparison that Brian's like, Sully knows about the woods, you know, that he makes this kind of, okay, so he knows more than most people. Like, I don't know. I just thought that was a very sweet comparison and almost probably a comfort for him, right?
For
like
someone
who knows the woods, like Sully knows the woods. Now we have a doctor who knows what's wrong with him. Like, like it's a confidence booster, I guess.
At the store, we see that Olive is getting ready to go visit Brian, and she asks Lauren to come with her, and of course he says no, and being the sister she is, she's like, I swear, you have a heart of stone, Lauren. But Orson Bean is so cute. He's, like, getting pieces of paper, and I guess, like, if you didn't know what he was doing...
I thought it was something to do, because remember, I didn't remember this episode. I was like, is he about to make the most epic plans for a schoolhouse ever? Like, I couldn't really figure out what he was doing.
Because he starts, like, basically ripping off pieces of parchment. And, yeah, I guess I've seen it before, so I knew what he's going to do with it. But if you didn't, yeah, who knows what you're thinking. Maybe you're thinking it's wrapping for a present, or I don't know. But it's kind of like, in this moment, it seems like he's, like, cold-hearted, but we'll see that that's not the case. And then we have a short clip of Matthew, who rides right by Sully.
Is Sully vision questing? He looks like he's vision questing. Also, did you notice that horse straight up bucks as he's riding by? Like, I bet they chose that shot because that horse was bucking with Matthew or whoever the stunt rider is behind. It's a cool shot.
Didn't notice. Wish I could say I did. Dr. Mike is in the clinic and she's... reading.
Studying.
Yeah, she's studying. Good for her. So just so you guys know, doctors and physician assistants and any healthcare professionals don't know everything, and they have to look things up on the internet now, but also any materials and journals. So we see that Myra comes by to drop off flowers, which is sweet. And, you know, she's like, they're from me and Horace. But, you know, Horace, he won't leave that office till he hears back from that doctor.
It's cute.
Yeah. And I like that Dr. Mike is like, he's a lucky man to have somebody like you. Olive then stops in. I mean, there's always kind of this feeling that Olive's not a huge fan of Myra, right?
Yes. So I thought about this hard. I was like, why did they make such a big deal about, you know, Myra? Very obviously, Olive walks in and Myra looks like she's ready to bolt for the door. But I remembered the last time that Myra and Olive would have been in the clinic together probably would have been the epidemic when Olive told her she didn't need help. They didn't want help from people like her. And Dr. Mike was like, she's my friend. She's, you know, she's helping. And so I think this is supposed to show like a sliver of change that Olive just greets her.
And, I mean, Myra, yeah, she even looks surprised that Olive says hi.
Yeah.
But Dr. Mike tells Olive that, you know, there's, concerning Brian's condition, there's no way to tell if the bleeding has stopped. And, you know, Olive's obviously still worried, but Mike just keeps repeating, like, I don't know. And we kind of see their reconciled relationship again because Olive holds her hand and is supportive, like the Olive we did know before we had a weird discontinuity. But I'm sure Dr. Mike appreciates it because she's looking for some support. And Sully is nowhere to be found to give it to her.
In Brian's room, he expresses all he really wants to see is the new school. And then Lauren comes to the clinic. And at first, he sneaks in
that like front door, really. I love it. I love it so much.
He looks like he's leaving some parcels by the door, but Brian hears him. And then he actually looks excited to tell him he's there. And Brian's like, you came to visit me? And we all just want to cry. And then he's got All the candy.
Which is funny just because we've seen previously him be annoyed by the fact that Brian can't choose and, like, won't choose quick enough, you know?
Yeah. And the fact that he knows his favorite, where he's like, gumdrops. And he's like, it's your favorite.
I know.
There's really, this whole sequence is really beautiful where he, unlike in Heroes, where there's this idea that they're going to have to prepare Colleen for a different life if she loses her fingers. Mm. Here, this is the only scene we're really gonna get where we are referencing that maybe Brian's blindness could be permanent, because very quickly it's gonna turn life-threatening. But I like this moment. It's just beautiful where he's teaching him to, or not even teaching him, but showing him how alive the world can be simply from smell and sound. I mean, it's amazing. The whole scene, right? Like, it's so heartwarming and heartbreaking at the same time.
Are you getting choked up?
No.
You sounded like you were, though. You don't look like you're about to cry, but I think you are. I like it a lot. He's just exposing him to this whole world that he hasn't thought about. I love their relationship. And actually, at the end, like, you know, when Brian smells the honeysuckle, Lauren looks like he's gonna cry. Like, he actually does, like you. He looks like he's gonna cry. Later that night at the clinic, Dr. Mike is sleeping beside Brian, and we hear Horace is yelling that the telegram has come and that Dr. McKay has found someone in St. Louis who is a neurosurgery specialist who's going to come. And they're all very excited, and they go to tell Brian, but they realize that Brian won't wake up. And Dr. Mike says that's because he slipped into a coma, which coma is a pretty broad term, I've learned. It just basically means that you're in this
unresponsive.
I mean, yeah, you're just in an unconscious, prolonged unconscious state, you know, where you're not arousable by voices or sounds or anything going on. But your brain is still functioning. It's just at a lower state of alertness. And a lot of things can cause coma. In this case, it's probably various trauma, herniation syndromes going on.
Are comas sometimes a good thing? Because it's your body trying to fight to heal itself? That's what I always thought.
I mean, I'm going to be like Dr. Mike. I don't really know if it's a good thing. I mean, comas are signifying that there's damage to the brain, which obviously not a good thing. And so the brain shuts down to kind of control that awareness aspect. But I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not really sure if they'll ever be considered.
Well, because I know, like, sometimes they put people in comas so that they can heal.
Inducing it, yeah, that is a little different. And to be honest, I also still don't know a lot about that. But I think in this case, it's just a sign that, like,
he's getting worse.
His condition is, yeah, progressing and not in a positive way. We also see during this scene that Sully shows up and Dr. Mike is mad. She's pretty peeved.
I'm going to say it first. We recognize that she's under a lot of emotional pressure and just,
yeah,
same as rite of passage, right, where she is saying things out of her worry and her desperation and her helplessness, and all she can control right now is her emotions, and she's not doing that.
No.
So I don't think anyone's gonna say that they like this scene. I feel like we could talk about it, but I feel like everything I'm gonna say is, like, she shouldn't have acted this way. We all know that, but she does. She blames Sully. Olive says, I haven't seen you complain once about his helping with the children until something went wrong. If that was all Olive said,
fine. Yep.
Perfect. This
Agreed.
Confront, you know, say, hey, like, this is not an appropriate reaction. But then Olive keeps going, and then Olive blames Dr. Mike. And then the Reverend is like, can y'all, like, stop?
The Bible says not to blame.
Which I'm, yeah.
Sure, he's trying to be that person. Break it up.
Yeah. Brian, Colleen, and Matthew are in that room, right? And you want to talk about, like, setting a good example for your children, right? None of them are behaving well. I like that the Reverend is like, Brian could still hear us right now. I don't know that he would know that, but that is true, and I almost wish he would say, Matthew and Colleen are sitting here, and Brian is in the room and could be hearing us. Do the three of you hear yourselves? Right. You know. But luckily, they don't drag out this conflict.
Because Dr. Mike tells her to get out. And again, there's still this conflict with Olive of, like, where she's like, you're not the only person that cares about this boy, because she still feels that kind of responsibility and probably maybe resentment about the whole situation.
It's unnecessary. With Charlotte. Yeah.
No, it's totally unnecessary right now. And I feel like a lot of things she says are just like attacks, you know, being like, you've been too busy trying to be a doc and a mom.
Right. Which we haven't even seen. So
I don't think
that that's really fair.
People, when they're fighting, get it, say things they don't mean, but
they're all feeling helpless. Right. And so, again, what can they control? They can control how they react to each other. And it's defensive, offensive. Everybody's mad.
Yeah. So Dr. Mike leaves the room crying and Sully follows her. Good job, Sully. And he says, I'm sorry.
I don't know that he should have to, but I understand that it's for him. Like, he does feel responsible.
But I think, I thought he was apologizing, being like, I'm sorry I wasn't here. I'm sorry I wasn't around sooner.
That's true. He does. That is what he says. Like, they make it weird that he disappeared. Who knows how long he's disappeared? You know, I don't know.
Right. It's totally not his fault, but I'm sure he feels responsible, and she wanted him there.
It's not his fault. It's not like he did it on purpose. Like, he's like, hey, something went wrong with Brian. I should disappear for, you know, like, he thought Brian was fine, and he went to, like, get his act together because he was feeling very conflicted about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Mike hugs him and says, it's not your fault. But I think she finally has someone to kind of just, like, vent all her fears to, because she's kind of told everybody, like, I'm not sure and everything. But at this point, it's become way more severe because now he is in a coma, and obviously isn't a good sign. And so she tells him, you know, I don't think he's going to last until that doctor gets here. And Sully, I don't know, I feel like he has all the right things to say, where he says, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the doctor is right here. And she's so frustrated, right? Like, you don't understand. I've done operations I didn't know before, but this is different because he's my family. I think the poignant phrase she says is, you know, it'd be one thing to lose him, but it would be another if by my own hand.
Yep.
It's a valid point.
It's more than a valid point, because we've seen her lose patients who she had next to no relationship with, and it tore her up. So
yeah.
And I think, going off of what people even said 2 episodes ago about rite of passage, like, we've seen Dr. Mike's defensiveness and protectiveness of Matthew when there was no physical threat to him, and now this is, like, even more out of her control, and it's physical, and it could be death, it could mean permanent blindness, and
I think a lot of people would argue, like, oh, that's not, you can't do that today, you know, they wouldn't let you operate on your own child. But this is a very different scenario. Like I said.
Would they not?
No, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. But
really?
Yeah.
Like, any operation?
Okay, so now I'm going to say I don't know again, just because I'm not positive. It depends on.
No, but I'm just wondering, because you said to me before, like, oh, when I become a PA, I can do this for you.
Yeah, well, that's different, right? Sure, yeah. That's different than doing open brain surgery. I'm not sure, and if anyone's listening that's a surgeon, they would probably be able to give more advice on that, but I'm saying it's not even a relevant point to bring up, because she's obviously the only person here, the only person that can do it, and if she wants her child to have any chance of living, she has to do it soon instead of waiting for somebody else.
I liked the acknowledgement, though, that Sully said, like, you've done operations you didn't know before. Mm-hmm. I was there, remember? Kind of almost challenging her to be like,
being like, I have showed up for you.
Well, no, not maybe, but there's a lot of hugging in this scene too, by the way. Let's bring back my hugging.
I love hugging.
This.
I literally was just telling Mom on the phone yesterday that, like, it's really hard being someone that is a hugger living during COVID when I'm in school. I don't have my family around. I have very limited interaction because of COVID and everything. So it's a struggle. But
get a dog. I hug my dog a lot.
I know. My friends tell me that all the time. Get a dog. I'm like, I would love to get a dog, but I'm about to go on clinicals in a few months and moving somewhere every 5 weeks is probably not the best environment for a dog. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that Sully is kind of choked up at the end of that scene when he's telling her it's going to be all right. And I like seeing that part of him. But Dr. Mike is up the next morning and it kind of looks like she's been up studying all night, which relatable maybe. I don't do that though. I could never do that. But Colleen, I think this is when we were kind of talking about the whole everybody's feeling helpless. Matthew's feeling helpless. Like, I don't know. What can I do? I wish I could do something. And Colleen says, you know, if you want to do something, go build a schoolhouse, because that was the last thing Ryan said he really wanted. So Matthew tries to round up some men to build the school. And again, there's this conversation of like, Robert E., you might not want to do all that work for free. Where obviously somewhere that Negro children won't be welcome, he says, and Cheyenne children won't be welcome, Sully says.
Right. My thought originally was, oh, they didn't want to ask Robert E. because he's a black man.
But
now we realize, oh, this is about the fact that this is a white kid's school, which is like, didn't even cross my mind because, you know, I live in 2021 right now. But I mean, that's really shocking and jarring. And yeah, like realizing what that would mean to ask that.
I think there's that added element of like, he's obviously been a slave and had to do work in horrible conditions. And now he's working, but he gets paid for it. So I think going back to that place of them being like, we're going to ask you to do some work and do it for free is negative in their mind as well.
I don't understand why it would be for free, though. Because they said they raised some money.
Well, for supplies, but I don't think they're paying anybody to do it.
Right.
Because he was saying, too, like, that money is for books and desks and everything.
Yeah, no, you're right. He did say that.
But before they can kind of resolve that, Horace comes and says that the doctor isn't coming. He's not going to make it until next Wednesday. And Dr. Mike is pretty clear in saying that Brian won't make it that long. And that's an assumption. We don't know. People stay in comas for years, but the likelihood of...
It's a risk.
It is a huge risk. Like I said, you know, when you're in a coma, that means damage has been done to your brain. The longer you're in that, it's not a good sign.
So then she makes a plan.
She does.
Colleen can't help. Jake volunteers. This is the second time in a row that Jake has volunteered, episode-wise, because in Heroes, he volunteered to help with Colleen. And here he volunteers, which I appreciate because I feel like we have seen a turning point in Jake's character since Happy Birthday when it comes to doing whatever he can to help Dr. Mike, which I like seeing that now he's accepted that it's not like her helping him but him helping her kind of thing. Like, I don't know, I just really like that. Grace is gonna help, which I was kind of surprised that she asked Grace. I don't know why it surprised me, but maybe it's just because
I think she trusts her.
I don't know that Grace has ever helped before.
No, but like, it's like, how many people there does she know and trust who aren't... I mean, they're all emotionally involved, let's be honest, but I think it's someone that she trusts who hopefully, you know, would be honest about if she'd be willing to do it or not, and so...
And all the shippers are gonna die because in the significance of her being like no family to Sully.
I love it.
Everyone's gonna be like, oh my gosh, she called him family. But I think it's a little inappropriate to be excited about that because the context of it is, if Brian dies, I don't want you to be there.
No, it's not that I'm excited about it either. I'm just like, that is so, it's so sweet. And I think her knowing that he's supporting her from a distance is better than him being there and like I said, everybody's emotionally invested at this point, some more than others. And no, I like it. I like it so much because she looks like she's going to cry. And then she just like closes the door. I would have been like, give me one more hug for support. Give me one more good luck hug. So basically now is when we kind of get into the name of this episode, which is the operation, because we're starting this whole process.
I find it a little maybe uninspired that they called this episode The Operation, because how many more operations have we already had?
It's the main focus of this episode, I guess, yeah.
I get it.
Which, yeah. It's important to be said that the first brain surgery to be done and recorded, mind you, that's very important, was 1879.
Oh, so about 10 years from where we are.
And again, that's, it doesn't mean they didn't have ideas. It just means that that was the first one to be done successfully. And it was a brain tumor removal, so a little bit different situation than this. But back in the 1880s, specifically 1884, was the first trepanation. We use the term today, but not for this. We use it for like toenails and different things, but it's making that burr hole to expose that dura mater. So we'll see her do that. But I mean, that's been done since like Neolithic times. They used to do that because they thought it was a way to let evil spirits out. So people would just like live with holes in their heads. Don't ask me how that worked. But the average time of a subdural hematoma, like open brain surgery, would be about 5.5 hours. That's the average time today. So keep that in mind while you're thinking about this scene going on. But I just want to explain a little bit about what's happening before we kind of jump into it, because what's going to happen is she's going to do a craniotomy where you remove a flap of the skull. You drill a burr hole into the skull to allow that blood to drain. Sorry if this is grossing people out. You know, and today in the hospital, we would watch that closely. You know, a lot of times they put like a sensor actually inside your head to measure the intracranial pressure to make sure it's not still increasing.
Oh my God.
A lot of times they put a drain in case there's still fluid or blood leaking. You know, they get meds to control their symptoms. You usually get a repeat CT scan. So there's a lot done, but they actually suture that dura back into place. And a lot of times they take that skull and replace it with they keep it in there with pins and screws. And so, as you can imagine, this is like a legit procedure that with general anesthesia. So, I mean, they're using chloroform here. That's what they have. I'm not going to knock on it because that's the option right now. But everybody's waiting outside. And I think Dr. Mike does a good job in kind of delegating roles here of...
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention the reverend's helping,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. He's been instructed to basically administer the chloroform. And I think Jake brings up a good point. Like, isn't he already unconscious? But, you know, if he were to wake up at any point, which is totally possible, if he were to stir unconsciously or anything, it could be really detrimental since she's going to have her hands and instruments inside his brain. Jake is useful because he's able to shave Brian's head, which is a good use of...
That was cool.
Yeah, it makes him feel important. There's very, like, serious music going on, though, and everybody's pretty solemn.
It's like Jake gets to use both his skills,
yeah,
right? Like, his skills as a barber and, you know, his medical... Which it's so interesting because someone mentions, oh, Lauren says, I heard you passed out at my surgery.
Which he did. Remember that?
My favorite thing was like no one even checked on him. They're like, is he breathing? Yep. Okay, leave him. Yeah, I like that it shows progression. Like he knows, he trusts Dr. Mike now. He knows how important this is. And so he's not going to let anything happen like that.
Yeah.
We've known these characters for what? 15 episodes and just seeing growth in him already. Not that he's perfect or, you know, great, or that I won't be mad at him for something else, you know, tomorrow. But
right.
Just seeing that maturity,
yeah,
I guess, and growth
and
in
just
him
responsibility
is cool.
That he's taking for sure.
Outside the clinic, Sully, obviously not wanting to just stand around, starts walking away from the clinic where Matthew and Robert E. follow. We're not told yet where they're going, but we know.
Inside, we have Dr. Mike reading a book. She's looking at some visuals. I think they're good visuals. It's an actual, like, skull and everything. It's good, you know, and we've seen this before where she's done a procedure and, like, had a book in front of her. And, I mean, she's admitted already she doesn't know a lot, so I think it's good that she has something to go off of.
Robert E. is drawing up the plans.
Grace is being taught when to give the scalpels. Jake's being told to hold the clamps, and Dr. Mike is trying to figure out how to find the exact spot to release blood without damaging the tissue.
The men are bringing up supplies to begin the construction on the skull.
And we're getting ready to begin the construction on his brain. I don't know. Everybody's ready. And I just think about everyone in that room. And I'm just so glad, like, she has all those people that she can count on in town, you know. I don't know how long she's been living there just because we've had that discussion. But just how cool that is, you know? And so she decides to make a cut, which they actually show, which they rarely have shown. And I don't know, I think it looks pretty real. It looks like his real,
I looked
like,
away,
bare-skinned head.
The sound effects were more than enough for me to be like, no, no.
I just was impressed with how they made it look like they actually shaved his head. Like, it looked like that was his real...
You don't think it was his real head? You think it was a bald
cap? I
don't
know, you think he shaved Sean Tuvey's...
Does he have hair in the next episode?
Yeah.
Okay. That's inaccurate.
You thought they actually did that?
I think they should.
Like, someone that knows behind the scenes is going to write us and be like, did you know that actually.
He wore a bald cap.
I would assume so, yes.
I've never seen, like, a half bald cap, though.
I love it, his bowl cut.
There are still a number of people outside the clinic as this is happening, but they begin to hear the sounds of building and construction over at the schoolyard, and the rest of them follow the noise to go and help.
Grace is doing a good job at swabbing the blood out of the way, but you can see she has this look on her face like, what am I even doing right now?
I am not trained for this. I did not ask for this. I am a cook and a cow woman.
But, you know, I feel like Dr. Mike's probably feeling the same thing, like...
That she's a cook and a cow woman?
Well, no, that, like, what am I even doing right now? Like, the fact that I'm even doing this, like, I'm not prepared for this either, but she's doing with confidence, and I think that's what she needs at this point. But everybody's really sweaty, the Reverend's, like, saying a silent prayer, and then Mike uses this little tool.
It looks like a bottle opener.
Oh, gosh. Like, what I was talking about with the trepanation, drilling with a little tool, which... I mean, if you thought that was bad sound effects, you don't want to know how they do it now.
No, I don't.
With an actual drill.
You don't have to tell me. This was more than enough for me. I do have to say, this part, they don't show much of anything, but I have to give props to all the actors in the room because their facial expressions tell me more than enough about what is happening.
Yeah.
The building continues.
Yeah, the men are putting up the framework. Grace is being awesome. She's suctioning, and Dr. Mike explains that, you know, she can tell that the blood that's darker is coming from the compression, and so she's just hoping that she went deep enough to relieve that pressure. And Grace is so sweet. She's, like, wiping the sweat off Dr. Mike's brow, and again, I mean, this is kind of where we see it finish up, and she goes outside because the procedure's over. I don't know how long this would have took them. Like I said, today, with all the technology we have, the average time is 5.5 hours, so I would assume it would take, yeah, but we don't really know. Other than, I mean, the men have gotten a lot of work done on the schoolhouse, which is impressive.
I mean, probably, this is just my guessing, like, I think back then you would want to finish in the daytime because when it gets dark, they have very, very limited light.
For sure. So I think she walks outside when she's finished, and we've seen that happen so many times where there's, like, a huge crowd of people there for her to give the news to.
But there's no one
there.
So
she's probably wondering. She's probably wondering where everyone is.
Yeah.
But then she sees the school.
They, like, show this brief little shot where Horace is helping, and Hank goes and helps Horace. And this is what I'm kind of talking about, where people are not all one thing. Mm. Hank is oftentimes, and especially... Was that last episode? Was that Heroes, where he's, like, super racist? Yeah, I think it's Heroes, right? Where he's, like, attacking Grace.
Grace and Robert E.
Yeah. I don't know that I could loathe him more than I did in that episode. And then you have this small moment like this. And it's Horace, too. We know the significance. He...
Myra.
Yeah, like, everything. He hates Horace, and just seeing that, like, seeing them, you know, him put his differences aside to, like, do something good, it's so hard in our minds to think that people can be more than one thing, you know, and just be this complicated and be like, no, you either have to be the horrible, you know, racist jerk that we know you are, or you... are a good person. There's no middle ground. But that's not true. People aren't like that. People are multifaceted.
No. Even, you know, us too.
Yep.
Which, yeah, I was still surprised, though, to see him helping.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
But Dr. Mike updates the group. She says he survived the surgery, which is a big first step. But whether it was successful or not, now they just have to wait. And again, Sully... steps up to the plate to encourage her, and just at one point I was like feeling like, is she gonna faint? Like, she just looks so drained,
exhausted. Yeah. Physically, emotionally.
Yeah. But he's really encouraging. They kind of show the family sleeping overnight in the clinic, and the best, I paused that part where you can kind of see, like, Sully's on the floor, you know, Dr. Mike's in a bed, they have some cots where Colleen and Matthew are, and, you know, Brian's there, his head all wrapped up. But did you notice the best part of that scene?
You're talking about Wolf?
Wolf is standing with his head on the bed, and it makes me want to cry. It's so sweet. But then I was wondering,
I did notice
who is taking care of Brian's puppy? Where's the puppy? But I guess they left him at the... Because remember, the last time Brian was sick, I guess in the epidemic, the puppy was there in the bed with him, which was also super sweet. See, you guys are all like, oh, romance. And I'm like, the animals.
I love the animals, too. It's just, you're on a different level. They're still working on the school the next day. There's a lot of people there. A lot. Including Myra and Hank, obviously, and... It's starting to look good, and I even noticed there's a number of women also helping, yeah. Which is awesome, and I think it's similar to how we've seen, you know, tragedies happen and people come together for, you know, one cause, which I think is great. And
it kind of reminds me of, at one point, we lived in Amish country in Pennsylvania, and it really reminds me of when we would, like, drive by and see, like, the Amish barn raising, where they would get the whole mm-hmm. community would come together and all day. And, like, pretty much in a day, they would raise an entire oh, yeah. structure. And it's because it was men, women, children, everyone was out there contributing, whether it be, yeah, like, you know, they show water, food, you know, to, like, doing little tasks. And it's really incredible to watch. And it just, yeah, it just reminded me of growing up and seeing those barn raisings and being like, this message of we're stronger together is so powerful.
And many hands make light work, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see Brian with his head wrapped up, still unconscious. Dr. Mike's looking tired and extremely emotional. Grace and Olive being extremely supportive and in this way, you know, bringing her food. And we kind of see that her last meal is still sitting yeah. there. And so Olive says, you know, I'm not leaving until I watch you eat. I just like how everyone's able to support in their own way.
The acknowledgement right after that, we see basically everyone who's been working and building the school. I guess we find out after they finish, they all go and kind of hang out quietly, worn out at the saloon for a drink. Everyone's in there, which means, like, Hank let them all in. And, you know, yeah. there's this little moment where, like, Horace and Myra hold hands in front of Hank. And you wonder, is he going to say something? And he doesn't. And so...
Better not. The next morning, everyone is asleep in the clinic again. And Dr. Mike wakes up and sees that Brian is gone. Obviously, she's very frantic in this moment. She's calling his name, searching for him, running around town. And she spots him crossing the bridge.
Looking at the new schoolhouse. The way they shoot it, you know, she's knelt down just behind him. And so my assumption would be if he made it that far, you would think he can see. But she doesn't know that for sure. So it's like...
I think there's also a concern she's said is that he might not be the same, you know, Brian, depending on, you know, brain surgery, how you affect parts of the brain can really affect personality. So I
didn't think about that.
There is this wary moment where she's getting close and it's like, we don't know what's going to happen. Mm. It's also important to mention that Sully runs after her. There's a pause. There's music. We don't know what's going to happen. Brian turns around and says, look, Ma, the schoolhouse. And Dr. Mike embraces him.
More hugs.
And we see the schoolhouse. And Sully comes and put his arms around them all. And he's looking at Dr. Mike with, I don't know, I actually wrote this
heart eyes.
You'll probably disagree with me. No. No. Okay, give me some credit. Come on. I wrote, he loves her. I don't know. Just the way he looks at her, I think he loves them. I wrote, he loves her and them. I think he just really loves them.
Yeah.
I think it's a good ending. I'm glad they ended it there and it wasn't like this, like, oh, everybody comes and sees that he's okay and whatever. Like, this whole episode is focused on Dr. Mike and the responsibility that she feels and just, like, the internal struggle of, like, how can I do my very best, but also, like, if this doesn't succeed, I will feel extremely responsible for my child. And I don't know, I like that it ends with her and Sully, who shows up and is supportive all of during this episode when he's able. And Brian's freaking cute and I love it.
It is a good ending. Part of me did wonder what's going to happen when that St. Louis doctor gets there. And she's like, it's fine. I took care of it.
Well, you know, and maybe I think it's good, you know, when he comes to double check because everything seems fine. But, you know, it's not always.
Yeah, I mean, he'll need time. That's my only question. If he just had brain surgery, could he be walking around like that?
He probably shouldn't be, is the real question. He probably shouldn't be, but, I mean, they kind of made it look like he was stumbling to get across the bridge.
I mean, he's, like, holding on to the bridge.
Yeah.
It certainly is, like, more powerful than if he had just woke up in the bed and been fine and they did the hug. Like, it's right. certainly, because not only did they get the motivation to work together to finish the schoolhouse because of him, but also the idea that they made it, like, his quote-unquote final wish was to see this. Right. So, like, for sure, it hits that emotional point, like, big time. I just definitely was like... That's a far walk for a little boy who just had brain surgery. Part of me is, like, surprised that he wasn't just, like, good old Bartimaeus, the blind beggar. I can see! Mm.
Well, I'm also, like, Dr. Mike with her, like, stealthy mom skills. I'm, like, surprised she didn't wake up when he, like, got out of bed, but she's probably exhausted.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do really like the way that when she's behind him and looking at him, like the way that she says his name like a couple times, because mm-hmm. you can just really feel the emotional weight of that moment.
Yeah,
it's a good one. I really enjoyed that.
It is a good one. Me too. What would you say is your favorite scene?
You're gonna let me go first. You should go first.
No, you should go first.
Well. I think it's obvious you have to pick Lauren going to visit Brian, right? Mm. The most. It's
pretty good.
It's just the most. For all the things that it represents. But to be honest, I think there are a lot of good scenes in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. I am not going to be stereotypical and pick the last scene, even though, come on, love it. I think my favorite scene is actually Dr. Mike in the hallway with Sully.
Stop, No, that's the scene I thought you were going to pick. I wouldn't have guessed the last scene.
That's why I get annoyed, because I don't want you to know me so well. But I just, again, I think a lot of the scenes that I really enjoy are the ones that I can see myself relating to. And I think just, obviously, I've never done brain surgery, but I think there are emotional times in medicine when, and even now in school, like, I've been pretty homesick this past week of just, like, you want to be around people who know you, support you unconditionally, and love you no matter what you're doing, especially when you're doing things that are really difficult. And so I like that in that moment she's honest about, like, here's where I'm at. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm really worried, being able to be honest, and he is supportive in the way that he knows how, which meets her needs. And I don't know, like forget about the whole Sully and Mike storyline, do we love each other, whatever. I think it's just about they are friends and being supportive, and I liked that. I liked it a lot.
In favor of the romance, too, if Dr. Mike didn't have as strong feelings for Sully, I don't think she would have felt as overwhelmed by her disappointment that he was quote-unquote not there. You know what I mean?
Right.
If it wasn't that he has become someone that she cares deeply about, and him too, the level of responsibility and guilt that he feels, not only for what happened with Brian, but then for the fact that he wasn't there for her, not on purpose, but like...
Yeah.
No, I think it definitely speaks volumes to the fact that she gets so angry and reacts so badly is because... she has come to count on him and rely on him and depend on him and all that.
Right. Absolutely. Now, where are we thinking about ranking this guy?
Where are you thinking?
I mean, I think we both have established that we like it, so I'm thinking, you know, closer to the top.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder for our listeners right now, episodes 1 through 5, number 1 being Happy Birthday, Bad Water, The Pilot, The Visitor, and The Great American Medicine Show.
I think if you would ask me, like, my personal ranking, I would say that this is my favorite episode that we've watched so far.
More than Happy Birthday.
Yeah, because Happy Birthday...
I think I would kind of agree, so that's why I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah, because Happy Birthday, there was, like, you know, where she was so mad that everyone was talking behind her back and, like, was kind of more silly. Just, like,
petty.
Yeah. And, you know, and even the Jake storyline, she gets so mad at him, and I liked that storyline, obviously. I feel like this one's more impactful, and I would probably watch this one again.
Again?
I don't know that I would say that the performances are better, because definitely some of the emotional points, especially with Jake in Happy Birthday, I think the performances were better there, but as far as character development and conflict. It's funny too, because like I told you, I have no recollection of this episode prior to watching it, but I think if you would ask me like, oh, what's been your favorite episode so far, I'd be like, oh, the operation was so good.
I think I agree. I just was thinking that wouldn't happen, and people might be in uprising that we're gonna put it above Happy Birthday, but I'm comfortable with that. I actually like that idea.
Okay.
There's nothing I don't really like. There's nothing I don't like about this episode. Not a single thing. I mean, obviously you don't like when they fight or whatever, but like...
But I think they don't drag it out unnecessarily like they could.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of resolve it in the immediate next scene. And now I'm thinking the message. Is the message of this one as strong? What is the message of this one?
I don't know. I mean, it could probably be a lot of things. Being honest when you don't know things, which we've seen that in a couple episodes. Yeah. Being... Not letting your fear overcome you.
Right.
Being supportive and in the ways you know how.
Yeah, actually, I think I like what you said, too, about when you look in the operation room and she has all those people with her, and then that's echoed in pretty much what it seems like the whole rest of the town joining together to build the schoolhouse. A sense of community in here, which is so... If you, like, contrast it with the pilot, where majority of the time she's alone.
Right.
Just to see that. And them all coming together toward a common goal, too. Because we've seen this town divided about a lot of things.
True.
So, yeah, that is pretty good.
It might not be as clear-cut as some other episodes, but
yeah.
Are we putting it as number one, then?
Let's do it. And then my plan is that when we finish, we're getting towards the end. We only have a couple episodes left. We'll have like a roundup episode at the end of season one where we can take a look at the ranking and we can adjust it as we feel we want.
I'm down.
All right. So this is...
Yeah, there's literally two more episodes.
I said a couple. A couple is two.
I know. And they're both good ones.
Yeah.
I like the last episode a lot. Mostly because it's Kenny
Rogers.
I was going
to say, I remember the photographer one. Not much about it, but I do remember that one.
Yeah.
I also have no recollection of our next episode, which is called what?
The Secret's Okay.
No recollection. I don't know why I don't remember much about this part of season one.
Well, no, yeah, that's fair. It's a long time
ago. Well, the last time I watched it would have been when I was recovering from a pretty intense...
Your operation.
My operation. Yeah. I had a horseback riding accident that probably should have killed me. Cool. Okay.
Thank you, listeners.
Can't believe we're getting towards the end of season one.
I know. That's pretty wild, y'all.
We've been on this journey together.
Okay. Now who's getting sappy?
We're not there yet.
Correct.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Not a Lady Podcast. If you want to write in lessons or comments for us on the operation, you can reach out to us on our social media, which include Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. All those can be found at Not a Lady Podcast. You can also send us an email, notaladypodcast@gmail.com, or visit our website, notaladypodcast.weebly.com. We really love hearing from you. You can also support us by liking or sharing our content on social media. We look forward to seeing you guys in the next episode.
Bye, guys. See you soon.